Hey, football fans, Drew Brees here. Kroger Play and Owner's Box have teamed up for the next generation of daily fantasy sports. First-time players can get $25 in free entries, plus 250 fuel points. And you can score all season long with 2x the fuel points for every dollar spent to use at Kroger Fuel Centers. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER.
Void where prohibited. Eligibility restrictions apply. 18 plus in most eligible states, but age varies by jurisdiction. Offer is valid between 8/6/25 and 1/5/26. Terms apply. See full terms and conditions at ownersbox.com/footballfuelpointstc.
Welcome into the Rockies Insider. I'm your Rockies Insider, Patrick Lyons, with this audio-only edition. Make sure you're subscribed to the YouTube channel, the Rockies Insider, so you can find out when I am going live, either from the ballpark or with a guest like Drew Goodman I just had on the other day. Going to talk about more about this Rockies' abysmal start in a slightly different context, but mostly from the angle that Bill Schmidt spoke with MLB.com recently and going through some of those comments that he made. And I also want to share with you some facts and some opinions and misconceptions about the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum as far as it relates to Pete Rose, Shoeless Joe Jackson, and everybody else who is now going to be eligible despite being very naughty. Rockies, their road projection after the sweep by the Rangers, you probably saw this on social media, at Patrick D. Lyons or at Patrick D. Lyons MLB, at 2-20 following the three-game sweep in Arlington, Rockies on pace for 7 wins on the road, franchise record 14. That was set in the pandemic-shortened season of 2020. They played 30 games on the road, so they're actually pretty decent. 21 is the fewest in a normal year. They're on pace for 7. Winning 1 in Phoenix moves the projection to 10 wins, which would still be a franchise and MLB low. So we'll see what happens there. 7-36 going into the Diamondbacks series is a 26-win projection. I had to do a little bit of research. First off, I realized that they wouldn't even reach 20 wins by the All-Star break if they were to continue to play like this. Even if they were to play a little bit better, they might be at 20 when the Rockies have an obligatory 1 All-Star. I wanted to mention this when I was on foul territory the other day. The franchise record for most seasons in a row with 1 All-Star in Rockies history was 2. That happened on 3 different occasions. This year will be the 5th consecutive year with 1 All-Star. Previously, the record was 2. It's one thing if you're bad. It's the other thing if you're bad and boring. Did some quick research to figure out how many stretches of 20 games, so less than half of what they've already played, 20 games where they're playing at a winning percentage of where they're at now or worse. Before this year, there were only 8 instances in their 32 other seasons where they were even this bad for 20 games, and we are well over 40 at this point. Bill Schmidt spoke with MLB.com for the first time since the managerial change, saying, quote, "I always thought we were trailing the Diamondbacks by a year or so, but we're farther than that," referring to a 2023 assessment. Yeah, he actually said that at the 2022 winter meetings in December of 22. Diamondbacks immediately go to the World Series, and the Rockies couldn't get out of their own way and lost 100 games in back-to-back campaigns. For me, the most glaring article, the glaring line from the article was that Schmidt held assessment that the Rockies were derailed by losing second baseman Tyro Estrada. I'll say that again. Because Tyro Estrada went on the IL and was on the 60-day IL, and they're still waiting for him, that's the reason why they are so bad. 7 wins going down into Phoenix. And I'll say, yeah, they would have, I don't know, the momentum would have probably lifted them to a lot more than what Estrada just would have brought on his own. Even if he's a 2-win player, which would actually mean he's very good. I mean, he'd be their all-star. But if he was a 2-win player, you wouldn't even just add 2 more wins because that's going to make everybody else around you better. That's one of the biggest issues with the Rockies right now is despite how good Brendan Doyle, Michael Toglia, and Ezekiel Tovar were last year, who's around them to support them and protect them so that they can make the step to the next stage, to the next level? Juan Soto went up another level when he had Aaron Judge hitting behind him. Anybody's going to, but you would think with how good and how talented Juan Soto has been that he was probably already at his peak form. And no, he still had another level to go up, if not two. And the Rockies just haven't been bringing in those quality players. So I will say that, of course, if Tyro Estrada had never gotten hurt, the Rockies might have doubled the amount of wins, but those 14 wins would still put them dead last in Major League Baseball. I feel like saying that the loss of Tyro Estrada is really what's derailed this team feels a lot like when Dick Monfort said that the team would be near 500 ahead of the 2023 season and they would eventually lose 103 games. It really just sounds tone deaf. Also in this article, it says the Rockies are perceived as thin and behind the curve structurally. They're maligned for their small research and development departments. They were behind other clubs in adding a second team in Latin America and opening a performance lab, and were one of the five latest teams to adopt a pitching machine that allows hitters to face specific pitchers virtually. The word perceived there in that paragraph does a lot of heavy lifting in the sentence, because I don't think it's a perception. I think that is the fact. Asked if the Rockies should have pushed for a starting outfielder rather than left the position to prospects who haven't emerged, Schmidt admitted, "We could have done some things." I'm kind of okay with that, right? You want to create some space for the young players, and you have Doyle and Beck, and then a third outfield spot for another young player. And maybe by midseason, Veen and or Yankiel Fernandez will emerge as that corner outfielder, and it'll be fine. But again, a lot needs to happen for that to actually go down. Sure, you could have brought in a veteran outfielder, like a one that would have value, not one that you're giving a non-roster invitation, no knock on Nick Martini, but bring in a free agent, a proper free agent corner outfielder who you could flip at the trade deadline, and then still have your young outfield of Beck, Doyle, and then in right, Veen or Yankiel Fernandez. Could have had that. Article also says Schmidt took criticism when he didn't deal shortstop Trevor Story or John Gray in 2021, but stands by not accepting offers he didn't like for Story or feeling he was close to extending Gray's contract. Schmidt, bottom line, got played by John Gray and his agent. Bottom line. Trevor Story business, I guess I can't be too critical of. The thing I'll say is that, you know, if you wanted to trade Trevor Story and you weren't going to bring him back, you could have traded him at the beginning of the season. But of course, they didn't do that because they had just traded Nolan Arenado. And again, you could have traded Nolan Arenado during the pandemic when there was nobody in the ballpark and there wouldn't have been fans booing and upset. And when they finally did come back, it would have been on to the next thing. And yeah, disappointed, but you would have had a lot more to show for your return for the players that you dealt away in Nolan Arenado and Trevor Story. So Schmidt got played by Gray and his agent. Colorado should have given John Gray a qualifying offer after the 2021 season. That would have forced Gray to choose Colorado for one more year at, well, I want to say close to $20 million. It was $18.4 million to be exact. Or he can go sign elsewhere if he doesn't want to really stick around. He didn't mean that he wanted to return to Denver. If he signed somewhere else, then the Rockies would get a compensation pick like they did for Story. Even before you theorize, well, you could have put Gray in the corner with the qualifying offer, Rockies could have given Gray a deadline saying, if you don't sign this particular offer that we are going to make you as an extension, if you do not sign this offer by this date, we will be forced to trade you. If they didn't think he was worth a one-year $18.4 million qualifying offer, then you give him that ultimatum. If you're on the fence, I guess you could hold on to him, which maybe they were, and then you give him the qualifying offer. So even if you say they were on the fence about, you know, this actually coming to fruition and them being able to re-sign him, when it doesn't happen, you give him the qualifying offer. I believe that's within 7 days of the final out of the World Series. Okay, we've been kicking the can down the road here for, what, 3 months? And we don't have an extension in place? Well, we got to give you the qualifying offer. Because then what that does, again, as I said, you either return for $18.4 million or when you go out into free agency, the team that signs you is going to lose a draft pick. And now all of a sudden, you are less attractive and, you know, teams aren't going to give you that same amount of money because they're now losing something. That's That's the gift and the curse with the qualifying offer. So Gray ended up receiving 4 years, $56 million from the Rangers when he didn't get the qualifying offer. Or you can look at it and say he received $14 million annually from the Rangers. So the Rockies could have paid a premium for not having to give him a long-term deal at $18.4 million if they gave him the qualifying offer, which they did not do. And that says everything about them dropping the ball when it comes to John Gray in every which way. That $56 million deal, I don't ever remember reading this anywhere. I'm sure there could be a spreadsheet somewhere. I know. I just said spreadsheet. The hairs are standing up on the back of my neck right now. I'm excited. I might need to do this. But the $56 million guaranteed deal that John Gray received from the Rangers might be one of the largest deals ever given out to a player who did not receive a qualifying offer. Now, to clarify, if we just look at last year's free agent class, Blake Snell did not get a qualifying offer from San Francisco last year because he was ineligible. He'd already received one from San Diego the year prior. So again, I'm saying eligible players to receive a qualifying offer. Jack Flaherty is another one of those guys. He's never received a qualifying offer yet. However, he was traded during the 2024 season. When you're traded in the season of your free agency, or that season, your final year of your contract before free agency, you are ineligible to get a qualifying offer from your new team. So Gray getting $54 million at an annual rate that really wasn't a lot more than the qualifying offer at that time, I've got to think is one of the larger deals ever for an eligible player who did not receive a qualifying offer. The MLB article does end on this quote from Bill Schmidt, quote, "I believe in the process." Now, I think I speak for everyone not currently in the Rockies front office or just the entire organization right now, and I say I don't believe in whatever process this is for the Rockies right now. The next opportunity I get to speak with Bill Schmidt, I will have to ask, with this being the seventh consecutive losing season in team history, what's the timeline for this process? Because it looks like it's going to be at least a decade. And to be fair, I guess I should preface by saying, to be fair, the process didn't start in 2019. No, they still had dudes in 2019, still had some dudes in 2020. But this process is taking a while, and it doesn't seem like it's turning just yet. It doesn't seem like it's turning just yet. We're at a place that we've been for the last couple of years of, in the next 2 years, if ... But again, we've been saying that since 2021, since they traded Nolan Arenado. It just hasn't gone that way. The Hall of Fame. Boy, oh boy, is there a lot going on with that. A lot of misconceptions when it comes to Pete Rose being in the Hall of Fame. If you didn't hear the news this week, MLB and Commissioner Rob Manfred declared that being, quote, permanently ineligible, that was the name of the list, being permanently ineligible ends when a person dies. Now, when I talk about misconceptions, I think anyone who listens to this podcast, I would consider rather informed, and that's not any kind of biased, kiss-assy thing that I'm trying to say. Even if you didn't listen to me or this podcast, I think seeking out a Rockies-focused show to understand more about what's going on inside one of the worst seasons in Major League history shows a certain level of curiosity required of being considered intelligent or being a learned person. And so I think the biggest misconception when it comes to this topic is that if you went to Cooperstown into the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum, the history of Pete Rose would be absolutely scrubbed from every corner of the building, right? Like, oh man, why won't you let Pete in? And man, it's the Baseball Hall of Fame. I mean, don't you think he should be represented? That's the misconception because it's not true. It's not true. The full name of that building is the National Baseball Hall of Fame and Museum. For example, when we say Cooperstown, that word Cooperstown doesn't, you know, just represent the museum. It can at times, but it doesn't just represent the museum. That's the name of the town that the Hall of Fame is located in. So sometimes we shorten it to Cooperstown. Hey, did you get into Cooperstown? This guy was elected into Cooperstown on his first ballot. He wasn't elected mayor. He was elected into the Hall of Fame, the proper, literal Hall of Fame. Also, when I say Hall of Fame, sometimes that means the building, which does include the museum. Other times it means the actual Hall of Legends where the plaques are located. And I'm really curious how many people who hear that the man with the most hits and the most games played in the history of the majors isn't in Cooperstown or the Hall of Fame actually thinks Pete Rose's story is scrubbed from the history books. Because that is not true. What is true is that Pete Rose did the one thing you cannot do in any professional sport. And that's ruin the integrity of the game by gambling on it and arguably fixing games like Shoeless Joe Jackson and the 1919 Black Sox were found guilty of.
Say what you want about AI, but it's here. And it's helping businesses get more done in a day. Wix's website builder is infused with AI so you can stay ahead. Create a beautiful, functional website just by describing your idea. Track how your site appears in AI search results. Create custom images on demand or launch an entire campaign in a matter of minutes. Wix gives you AI wherever you need it. Try it out for yourself at wix.com.
So now that being permanently ineligible ends when a person dies, that means Rose Jackson, and I believe the list is like 11 others, can now potentially join that shiny room with all the plaques. I think this sets a very, very bad precedence for a couple reasons. And it's probably going to sound extreme, and I don't like this example all the way, but the concept I feel like is there, right? Like, should criminals be pardoned after their passing? I'm not sure what good that does. In fact, I would argue it's worse, right? And we're not doing that. We're not pardoning people after their death. We wouldn't want their family to suffer, right? Now, I don't necessarily agree with that. But we do live in a black and white world. Either your lineage suffers for something you did, or the power of the punishment suffers. And thankfully, we're not talking about life or death when it comes to baseball. This is a kid's game, right? But we are talking about the integrity of the sport. And there can be a punishment that goes beyond death. So that if you decide to make a decision that, well, you know what? This is going to get me banned. I'm going to be on the permanently ineligible list, even though the word permanent now doesn't mean permanent. My family will benefit from all my accolades. And so I might do some things that are against the rules. You would say, I think most people would say, well, no, that isn't fair. That's not. But I think the biggest precedence that gets set here, which is bad, is say what you will of ending a ban when someone dies, but won't the history books just view this as a happy ending? And should we have a happy ending for someone who broke the quintessential rule in professional sports? Should we be able to say, in the end, it was okay because Pete got his plaque in the same room as some of the most, some of the people that had the most integrity in U.S. history, Jackie Robinson, Lou Gehrig, great human beings. Happy ending. No, that doesn't seem just. So December 2027 is when Pete Rose could get into the hall. That's the soonest. That's when the veterans ballot becomes available for him. They meet every December. There's three different eras for the veterans ballot. And it should be made clear, again, another misconception, do some homework, right? It's okay. It's okay that you don't know everything, but then you might want to scale it back with how hardcore your opinion is if you're uninformed. It's hard because some people don't know that they're uninformed. And it's hard to admit that people that are professionals, the people that make their life at something might actually know what they're talking about. So the December 2027 ballot is not the BBWAA, Baseball Writers Association of America ballot. It's not. There might be a couple writers on there, but it's a 16-person panel that'll be comprised of active living Hall of Famers, a couple writers and historians, and another third will basically be executives. So also available. Happy Felch, Fred McMullen, Sui Riesberg, Buck Weaver, Lefty Williams, Eddie Seacote. Eddie Seacote is the one other guy I think that could make the Hall of Fame and benefit from this, along with Pete Rose and Shoeless Joe Jackson. Now, Buck Weaver was on a Hall of Fame trajectory, only played 9 seasons. Shortstop, third baseman for the 1919 Black Sox. Now, again, another misconception. This is more of a fun fact. They were the Chicago White Sox. Bottom line, they were the White Sox. They were nicknamed the Black Sox because they were naughty boys. And it was also because a lot of them had dirty socks. They wore actual white socks back then. Now the White Sox wear black socks. But the owner, Charles Comiskey, was so cheap at the time that he would charge players to do laundry. So the players revolted and said, oh, well, then we're kind of just not going to wash our uniforms since, you know, you're being so chintzy. And since, you know, we need to save some money. In fact, we might even need to make some money. Does anybody know how we can make a couple bucks? Oh, yeah, I know. Let's throw the 1919 World Series. Hence, the Black Sox. Now, if Rose and or Shoeless Joe Jackson gets in, I got to ask this question. What does it mean for PED era players who weren't even breaking a rule? I'll say that again. Barry Bonds was not breaking an MLB rule. Think about that. The commissioner that presided over that era in the Hall of Fame. But those players are going to be punished even though they didn't break a rule, even though most of them never even got suspended, let alone banned. That doesn't make sense. Priorities. Now, there's an article in The Athletic where some former teammates and colleagues of Pete Rose were split on whether Pete will actually get in. I think all of them said, yeah, he deserves as far as being a player is concerned. Yeah, absolutely. Jim Cott was very interesting. He said, quote, I talked to him a lot and he would not want this. He's been quoted as saying that. And there's also this that Jim Cott pointed out. I guess when it comes right down to it, when he's on the ballot in 2027, if I were on that committee, the first question would be, quote, do we just look at Pete for what he did on the baseball field? And if that's the case, that's a no-brainer. But you can only vote for 3. So what do you do about it? Tommy John or Dale Murphy or guys like this who have never been accused of anything like that off the field? Then it's going to hurt their cases. There's also a new rule that that the Baseball Hall of Fame put into place about a year or two ago. And I forgot to double check on this, but I think it's something like if you don't receive 25% of votes on the veterans ballot, you're done forever. Just like now on the writer's ballot, if you don't get 5%, you're done. You can go on a veterans ballot, but you're done if you get less than 5%. So Troy Tulowitzki, Carlos Gonzalez, they both got one vote. They're not going to be back on the writer's ballot. So if you don't get 25% of the vote on the veterans ballot, you're done forever. Maybe it's 0 votes. It's definitely a very low number. I'll say that. And then I believe it's after 3 tries, you're done forever. So there could be other veteran ballot players who get passed over for Rose and end up getting screwed. It's not good. It's not pretty. So we'll wait and see what happens in December of 2027. Not sure if that will go down, if they'll get a couple votes. I'll be curious if he does get in. That will be the summer of 2028. And no mention about Shoeless Joe when he would possibly next get on. He might also be on that December 2027. No, because that's more contemporary era. It's like 1980 and on. So that, I don't know. I have to look and do more diving who might be on the ballot. Because I think it might be more like managers and executives. I need to double check and do a little more research because again, that could actually favor Pete Rose. But if it's other players of his generation, essentially, then I think that's going to hurt Rose's chance. But if it's executives and managers, which let's not forget, he was a player manager, he was the last player manager, and he was a manager at the time in which he did gamble on baseball. And remember, when he didn't bet on his team, he was sending a clear signal that his team was not very good that day. He didn't say they would lose. He didn't say they would win. But when he did think they would win, he would bet on them to win. So what does that message send when you don't place a bet on your team? Finally, a lot more WBC buzz continuing to radiate. I think Juan Soto has committed to the Dominican Republic. A few other players, as you know, we're less than a year away, March 2026. Very exciting. The big news, though, coming this week, Paul Skeens is going to pitch for Team USA, and it won't be the first time he represents the U.S. Remember, he did go to school down in Colorado Springs at the Air Force Academy. Dude thought he was going to be a fighter pilot. That was where he thought his path was. It also won't be the first time he'll have USA across his chest. He did it a few times, but I believe he also went down to South America as part of a 12 and under Team USA squad. So it's wild. Next time I get Drew Goodman on, I'll have to ask him how much he's surprised with the growth of the WBC, because frankly, I'm surprised by it. I love it. It's great. But I was skeptical of trying to start up a baseball version of the World Cup in spring training. There are issues with that. Still are. I still think it's better than nothing. I'm glad the WBC exists. But to me, it's so new. It's a new thing. It's like for many people listening to this, like, oh, the Rockies are a new team. They're a new kid on the block. And yeah, they kind of are. But in many ways, they've also been around a very long time. So I think it's great how big the WBC has grown. So I'm super, super excited for that. At Patrick D. Lyons, at Patrick D. Lyons MLB. I'm excited for you to reach out for me on all the social medias. DMs open pretty much everywhere. At Rockies Insider as well. Go over to the YouTube channel. Subscribe. You get notifications when I'm going live. And you can also comment on videos, whether they're old, whether they're new, whether it's just a YouTube short where you're listening to one of the top pitching prospects like Gabriel Hughes talking about what he's been able to do in his first full season back from Tommy John surgery, or Jared Thomas talking about his approach to the plate as being more of a true hitter than being a power hitter, as being a leadoff guy and someone who can steal bases. So tons of really good stuff over there. Make sure you check that out. Appreciate you dropping by on this audio-only edition and giving me some momentum. But, well, as I like to say, momentum, it can only be as good as my next show. So, of course, I'll talk to you then.
Life is unpredictable, but how you prepare for the unexpected shouldn't be. Take ownership of your life planning with Policy Genius to help your loved ones have a financial safety net in case something happens to you. Whether to cover debts and routine expenses, or even invest the money and earn interest over time. With Policy Genius, finding and buying life insurance is simple. You can compare quotes from top insurers and could find coverage that fits your needs and your budget. Plus, they offer life insurance policies starting at just $276 a year for $1 million in coverage. It's an easy way to feel good about and plan for the future. No wonder Policy Genius is the country's leading online insurance marketplace. Don't wait for life to make other plans. Protect your family today. Head to policygenius.com to compare top-rated life insurance policies, get your lowest quote, and make a smart move in under 10 minutes. That's policygenius.com.